That was majestic.
Thanks.
Oh, man.
Where is that one, guys?
I don't know how to top Micah's assessment of it. That was a good word.
Hey.
We were talking before about starting up the episode and the reasoning why, and I just had to say, you know, my eyes were watering as if there were onions in the room, so I just figured that I needed to talk about Davos. How's that for terrible entries to start shows?
I was going to say, in addition to what Micah said, that wouldn't it be crazy if each of the point of view characters in this book, if we assigned them olfactory senses or olfactory signatures, so like give ourselves a clue or to get ourselves into the mood. Olfactory means the sense of smell. So like with Davos, we just like cut an onion and then we get in the mood smelling onions. But I wonder what it would be for the other point of view characters.
I think that's an important thing that our listeners should be doing. If you are at home or in your car or in a friend's car or
crack
in a friend's
open an
home,
onion.
Before you listen any further, because we're going to talk about Davos today, get an onion, slice it, because it'll put you olfactory, right, Eric?
Olfactory. I'm going to double check.
It'll put you in the right mood.
Now that I've put that out there on the webs.
Eric just wanted to use his word for the day.
Okay, of or relating to the sense of smell.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
It's like on your app doc, on your iPhone.
Eric, can you please use that in a sentence?
Well, the example sentence on Google is, no, really though, this is a point of contention for me. The olfactory, it's a phrase. It's not even a sentence. Man. It just says the olfactory organs. Maybe there are more than one organ in the nose?
I think that taste is related to the sense of smell as well.
Oh, yes. You know what?
I'm not a nose scientist. I'll be the first to appear.
Episky.
Can you please provide the language of origin?
It's Dutch.
I'm still waiting for you to use it in a sentence.
Translation word origin. Oh, it's Latin for olfactory. And I would just say that my olfactory senses are tingling. It's a Davos chapter.
I'm tingling all over.
This was a wonderful chapter.
This was a
it
good
really was.
Short chapter. Shorter than previous.
Fairly short. But like a lot of beautiful language. Maybe I'm just like high on life right now, but I felt like this chapter just had a lot of wonderful descriptions of ships and like food and salt. And
Kate, if you were high on life, you'd be whistling.
Cassius, I was whistling for the first 15 minutes of this recording. I think we can all agree.
Patreon.
I was whistling.
It's true.
Patreon.com/goop. I wonder who's going to be, by the way, I wonder who's going to be our 100th Patreon-er.
Ooh.
George R.R. Martin.
George!
With a donation of $1 million.
No, George is actually our first 80 donators, I think. He's our first 80.
He is very supportive.
He's very supportive.
Yet another thing he's doing instead of writing The Winds of Winter.
Oh, we're also very supportive as well. Kate, I completely agree with you. I'm going to do my best to get my mind back on track right now. But
okay. When
I was reading the very beginning of this chapter, and it spoke of the perverse winds that they were battling, making their way back to Dragonstone, I immediately thought, all right, some wordplay. Like, there are so many different kinds of chapters, if you guys are reading along with us, through A Storm of Swords. And of course, that's a given. We know this. We're all deep into it. This is episode 240-something, so that's an old hat. But for me, just going off of what Kate said, and it's curious because that's legitimately what I was thinking. I thought back specifically to Jamie's first chapter and about just how different it felt with Cleos Frey and with Brienne and with seeing people in the trees, and it was foreboding and it was dark, but it was a different scenery. It was contextually way different than riding with these kinds of people in a ship on the sea and seeing smoke rise in the distance and knowing on the inside what Davos's problems are versus the kinds of problems that those people faced. It really does a great job of giving us almost so many different stories, almost so many different books in this one book. You know what I mean? It's like we get to taste a lot of different genres.
Yeah, it's like it's a big world, but it's fully fleshed out. I mean, you have a representative on like each city or each town or each side of the political battle, who's going to give you that piece of the puzzle, and it is a large 10,000 piece puzzle that George is writing.
Yeah. There's definitely chapters where he's focused on the action and getting from one plot point to another. And sometimes he just like sits down and he just writes the hell out of something. Yeah. I feel like he wrote the hell out of this chapter. Good job, George.
It's in contrast too, to the chapter just before it, because I know in the last episode we talked about how there really just wasn't a whole hell of a lot going on. But I feel like even in this chapter, there wasn't a whole hell of a lot going on, but it was just, it was written to the point where it was actually enjoyable. And,
oh, yeah.
And I know we talked about the start of the last chapter with being able to see through the eyes of Summer being interesting and getting that style of writing. But the rest of the chapter was just kind of Brand complaining, whereas this was, you know, it lifts you up a little bit, even though we know that Davos is going to get into a bit of trouble at the end of this chapter.
He's a man on a mission. He wants to reunite with his king and stab the woman to death who's with him.
Cut out her burning heart if she has
cut out her burning heart. I mean, you know, and we'll get there, but it's a pretty forward momentum. The forward momentum is big, even though we don't interact with any major players. You know, it's just a bunch of pirates or whatever.
So here we go. Everyone listening at home. Are you ready?
Because
I am.
Do it.
Thanks, Kate. Thank you.
You're welcome.
It's nice to talk to you guys.
Yeah, I missed you, Zach.
I missed you guys all week.
Eric, are you wearing pants?
Are you wearing pants?
I did miss you guys all
week. No, I'm wearing shorts.
That was deflection.
Davos. When he came up on deck, the long point of Driftmark was dwindling behind them, while Dragonstone rose from the sea ahead. A pale gray wisp of smoke blew from the top of the mountain to mark where the island lay. Dragonmont is restless this morning, Davos thought, or else Melisandre is burning someone else.
There's a sentence in the third paragraph here where he's talking about, he describes Melisandre as waiting with her god and her shadows and his king. So he's still very much like, Stannis did nothing wrong. Stannis is totally blameless here. It's all Melisandre's fault. And then he thinks to himself, she has broken him as a man breaks a horse. She would ride him to power if she could. And for that, she gave my sons to the fire. I will cut the living heart from her breast and see how it burns. Davos, in all of the experience that we have with Davos, he's never been a super vengeful person. He's very devout to Stannis. He's very sweet with Shireen, and he's sort of this tender, he's a cool dude, but he is slavishly loyal to Stannis. And for him to be so consumed with the idea of murder, I think I probably come up with this theory every single time, but I feel like something else is working inside his brain at this point.
Here's the man who turned his own maiming into like a love story. Like every time he tells the story, it's a bromance between him and Stannis, and so he is. You're right. I mean, to hear him say that he's going to cut out somebody's burning heart, it is a marked,
it's a little out of character for Davos.
Yeah,
so
marked
far.
Difference,
a little bit,
right?
A little bit.
And still she knows strange. She makes me feel uncomfortable,
right? And and he has this dirk that's been given to him by the captain of the ship that rescued him from the spear.
Just like, hey, thanks for the dirk.
Yeah, thanks for the dirk.
And who then, gives a dirk?
Right, it's and it's cool. It's
you're gonna
cool,
need this, son.
Can we just say it has one of the coolest ship names ever?
Yes.
Shyala's
dance.
Shyala's dance.
Shyala's dance.
That's cool, right?
Shadynasty's dance.
This is not to be confused with
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of. I couldn't get it out of my head, so I got like half
dude,
of the
guys, I played Game of Thrones Ascension on my iPhone, and
as
one
her?
Of one of the well, one of the people you can recruit to like go do missions for you is Alayaya.
Oh my god,
made me think of you.
I was gonna say, did you sleep with her?
Not yet.
That could happen.
I had to delete that game.
You gotta level up. So
it was good.
Too much memory.
It was like, you just hit a paywall pretty hard.
Oh.
But otherwise, it's fun. It's free to play. You can play the first hour of it without really hitting that paywall. It's interesting. It's probably the best Game of Thrones game that I've played so far. Anyway, we're getting
Are you
topic.
In this game as well? Is that why we're plugging it?
No.
Are you her taxi driver?
You just spin out of control and
hey, taxi driver.
It's a fucking limousine.
But,
okay?
But speaking of the captain, though, how about the fact that Davos is this revered individual that soon as the captain learns who he is, you were talking about how he gives him the dirk. The captain basically shit his pants when he learned who this was.
Well, and then gave Davos food that made him shit his pants.
Right? Yeah.
It goes, when he learned that the man he had plucked from the sea was the celebrated Onion Knight, he gave him the use of his own cabin and his own clothes and a pair of new boots that almost fit. He insisted that Davo share his provisions as well, though that turned out badly. And I'm going to skip the gory details and just go right to the end. He spent the rest of the day with one end or the other dangling over the rail. I just got that visual of
just imagine of how Liam much Cunningham more doing dexterous
just like,
you would
they
be.
Cut that scene?
Oh yeah, why oh why?
Hey, they let the horse do it.
Yeah.
When he describes Dragonstone as a great black citadel with gargoyles and dragon towers, I got such a great visual immediately from that. This reminds me of when I first read these books and I had no visual that had been provided by a TV show, and you just have to conjure the sheer scale of these mm-hmm. things in your head. What a great description, this black citadel where Stannis is holding court, as such as it is.
I remembered the gargoyles from the opening of Clash of Kings, you know, and the prologue is set at Dragonstone, I believe. And what I didn't remember, however, is introduced. I wonder if this is the first time this is specifically stated in a book. But Dragonmont is introduced in this first paragraph. I assume it's like a volcanic mountain.
That would be the smoke coming out of it and him thinking that Dragonmont is restless. That sounds like a volcano. Yeah. Plus later in the chapter, they talk about how Stannis and Melisandre, keep going down to visit these tunnels, and she's the only one who can walk in unburned.
That brings up one thing I wanted to talk about. We were talking about Davos, how he changed, or how like he's got this bloodlust or whatever now. There's a point in the chapter where he compares himself to Patchface, who was drowned, and the fact that Davos has had this underwater experience. Do you feel like he's been recruited by maybe the drowned god or a higher power that may have control over the sea to now extinguish the fire of Melisandre's god?
So do you think that the drowned god and the Lord of Light live in the same universe?
They hang out. They watch football on Sundays.
I feel like they play chess on Thursdays.
Well, because we have seven, right? We have the seven, the sept, and the septons and the septas. Those are the seven gods. But the Lord of Light exists outside of that.
Right.
And then the drowned god is off in the Iron Islands doing whatever he does. But I wonder, like, obviously Davos is a man of the seven.
Was there another fool who was drowned, or was that just Patchface? Because I feel like
Theon Greyjoy.
The drowned god is mentioned mostly by Theon Greyjoy, but when we learned about Patchface originally in the last book, it was just said that he comes up and he's different. Like he drowned and was reborn.
Right, but people who are drowned and reborn in Greyjoy lands are revered. Like that's their coming of age ritual. And Patchface came out totally batshit crazy. So I think that those are two very different attitudes about what happens under the sea. And I mean, maybe the Greyjoys come out batshit crazy too, but they're
then
just
again,
like more warlike.
Batshit crazy may give you the ability to adequately riddle your way into the future.
Right. So there's a scene later in this chapter with Patchface. Whenever there's a Patchface interaction of any kind, I always read his dialogue over and over and over again, looking for the hidden meaning, but it kind of makes me go insane a little bit. And I wonder if that's not the point. Like if you imagine this person in real life saying these cryptic things, you're like, what does that mean? You spend an hour thinking about it and it just makes you crazier. I wonder
if
that's...
I'm not going out tonight, guys. I just want to think about this.
Here's what he says. He sees Davos. He freaks out for a second. And then he says,
"Wait, Davos Seaworth."
Yeah, I mean, everybody's like, "Ah, Davos," except for Melisandre, apparently. But yeah, so Patchface says, "Fool's blood, king's blood, blood on the maiden's thigh, but chains for the guests and chains for the bridegroom." I. And then he runs off giggling. I was like, "What?"
That's the best exit, by the way.
Yes,
you just run
to me.
Off.
This sounds like the Red Wedding premonition, right?
Yes.
What? Fool's blood, king's blood, blood on the maiden's thigh. I don't know. I guess all of that is to do with Rob and his lady.
I was thinking purple wedding when it first came to me, because I was thinking of like I don't want to say exactly what I was thinking, but the purple blood, just because people in chains is like they imprisoned Tyrion and they would have done Sansa. I don't know.
That's interesting, though, because it starts with fool's blood, which would be Dantos.
Yeah,
fool's blood would be Dantos
King's
because
blood,
he's dead.
Joffrey.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Blow the Maiden's Thigh is definitely Sansa.
But it works for the Red Wedding too, because Rob, being the king in the north, right, died and stuff. So I suppose it could be either. But I immediately, yeah. I guess because Purple Wedding was closer to my mind.
Yeah,
front
could
of my
it
mind.
Just be a mix of the two? Right. Even.
Yeah, it could be. Maybe internally vague.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you look, you could definitely take certain parts of that and apply some to the Red Wedding, some to the Purple Wedding. Maybe what he says is not always fully prophetic. Like there's some vagueness to it, or it's not always just specific to one event. He just sees things, and maybe he's not very smart, to your point, and he confuses two weddings as being one. I don't know.
He's like, maybe he has green sight, but it's like from underwater. So it's like a little distorted.
I just want to remind everyone that this is a grown man who probably looks like the villain from True Detective, hopping over piles of bracken.
Oh, I don't know who the villain from True Detective is.
He's creepy.
I hope it's not
a
spoiler.
He's a green-haired spaghetti monster, pretty much.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. I just, it's so cool. I mean, and it goes back to what we were saying about the chapter as a whole. And I know, Micah, you said that maybe a lot didn't necessarily happen. But then I think about the rich structure of Dragonstone, and just about how much more of it we are seeing. And then I think about the Targaryens that treated this as their seat for so long. And that this place in Westeros was a fucking hotbed for badasses. Like, this place was where to be.
It was like the Mos Eisley Cantina at one point, right?
I mean, even better. Even better.
Even better.
And you know what I mean? And all the Targaryens would have unabashedly shot first. They would have not given a single fuck. And we learned that from Duncan Egg. You know what I mean? Like, they'll walk up to someone that is doing a show at their tournament convention thing and just start breaking their fingers. You know, like that's the kind of people that built and ruled and constructed and housed this place. So with Davos kind of just in his sickly state, and I feel like Salador did a really good job of just reminding us of how worse for wear he is, even though he's been rescued. Aww. I mean, he's in rough shape. You know what I mean?
He calls him my Onion Knight. Do you guys catch that? He's like, he's paler than my Onion Knight, and he no longer carries the fingers in the bag.
I will kiss you three times.
Yeah, I will kiss
you. One here, and one here.
I know it's too early for Owns, but Salador San owns this chapter so hard.
He does.
Here's like, Davos comes in, he's all like seasick from this trip, he's weak, he's been treated pretty well so far, but he sees Salador San, Salador San's like, yo, get this guy some hot wine, get him in a comfy chair, put a bunch of food in front of him. Like that feeling, just putting myself in Davos's shoes, just being so tired and worn out and having your friends just take care of you. Yeah. I just want to hug Salador San. He's so great. And then he knows that Davos is going to get in deep shit if he tries to go after Melisandre. And he's like, dude, don't do it. I'm just telling you, don't do it. Don't do it. And Davos is like, I shall do it anyway because I will. Stupid.
I will. Don't stop me.
I feel like we need some heated wine with cloves at our next live show.
Oh, man.
You know, like I think that would just put everyone in the right mood.
I make a mean mulled wine.
Ooh.
Just saying.
It's, you know, it is fall, so we might as well break it out.
Nothing less than 5 stars will do.
Yes, exactly.
No.
Are we already there? Great.
No. You know, guys, we
the episode is now over. Eric has done his read the tweets.
Hey,
we're going to iTunes.
What?
No, I want to. Can I read what Salador said when he sees Davos? Because it's a perfect moment of utter bromancity.
That's a good phrase.
I think this bromance works.
It's not passing.
He says, "Is it pepper stinging my eyes or tears? Is this the knight of the onions who stands before me? No. How can it be? My dear friend Davos died on the Burning River. All agree. Why has he come to haunt me?" And he calls him Sala.
Oh, yeah, Sala. I love that. I was going to say, that's almost word for word how I greeted you guys the last time I saw you guys.
It's true. Is it Peppa stinging my eye?
I'm sorry.
Is it this hotel room that stinks?
Is it the White Castle
heaven?
Sandwiches that have been in there for a fortnight?
Oh, man. That was the worst.
Anyway, but
until
this
I ate
chapter,
one, and then it was pretty good.
For Davos, I mean, he really has the opportunity, if he wants to get out. You know, he can go anywhere he wants to go. You know, he talks with Salador about, you know, going to Braavos and Myr and Lys and all these other places. and really returning to his former life. He doesn't have to go back and deal with Melisandre. He doesn't have to go back and serve Stannis. Everybody thinks he's dead, and he could take that route if he wanted to, but I think it's a combination of, Kate mentioned this earlier, his loyalty to Stannis, but also I think there's part of him in this chapter that, you know, that we see clearly having to deal with him as a father and how he just really feels and mourns for what has happened to his sons, and he blames Melisandre first and foremost for that.
Completely. Not even first and foremost. I think she takes the entirety of the blame. And to be fair, Stannis is the one who gave the order. He may be under the influence of Melisandre and be unable to pry himself out of it or unwilling to do so. But Stannis is the one that sent his boys to their death, and to blame Stannis for it is completely unthinkable to Davos. Yeah. It can't even enter his mind.
Or to even admit that sometimes shit happens, like the Lannisters, that Tyrion was smart and somehow through their various alliances and Tyrion's wits, they actually just managed. It was good old-fashioned, fair and square defeat. And still he blames Melisandre. He actually says that she was scorned for Stannis not taking her along, and so she burned the whole fleet.
Yeah, wow. That is interesting that the most logical thing would be to blame the Lannisters, who are the ones that actually killed his sons. But instead, right? It all comes back to Melisandre every time. And like I said, I feel like this could be part of Melisandre's plot. The fact that he gets the dirk, the fact that he's completely obsessed with murdering her when he's generally been kind of a gentle-natured dude.
How do you mean that that's part of her plan? Like, she's put a spell on him?
Yeah, I mean, we've seen weird stuff crawl out of her vagina, so I don't know what she's capable of.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
And so I feel like there could be something that's eating away at his brain intentionally to sabotage his relationship with Stannis and therefore strengthen her relationship with Stannis. If his most faithful servant, who is the most skeptical of her influence, is suddenly taken out of the picture entirely, then who's to contest her claim on Stannis's mind?
But why is Davos alive? And this is the question that I think goes through the chapter, because Davos really questions it himself. He's like, you know, that ship that found me shouldn't have even been anywhere near there. And I think it's Salador that says, oh, you know, it was taken by a heavy wind. And Davos is like, well, who sent the wind? Right. You know, he feels with like a lot of invigoration that he is on a God's quest of some sort.
But to Kate's point, taking it a step further, what if it's Melisandre who had the ship
come and find him?
Great manipulation.
How did she know he was alive?
She would know he's alive.
She knows all kinds of crazy shit.
She knew he had a dirk on him.
Yeah, well, that's, you know what though? That's, if we can talk about that for a second, Kay, I would be, this chapter has a potential to be really spooky. And so I kind of wish that all of Davos's plans were kept internal to him, that he didn't shout it across the room at Salador, what he wanted to do, and he reiterated how much he wanted to kill her and why, and Salador's like, no, man, there's some spies everywhere, you shouldn't talk like this, and he's like, no. Actually, what he says to him is, you are an onion smuggler, what do you know of skulkings and stabbings, and you are ill, you cannot even hold the dirk. He's like, you're not going to do this, man, chill out. But Davos keeps saying it, and if he had not said it out loud, then I would be totally like blown away at the end of the chapter when the Queen's men come, or when Melisandre's men come and escort him swiftly to the dungeon.
It's not like Salador is trying to talk him out of the assassination entirely, because he does say, like, you should not be the one to kill her. Let's go hire an assassin to do it. Like,
let's go to Braavos and get
still,
a faceless
he's
assassin.
He's still fine with the idea of her dying. He just doesn't want his friend to do it because he's in no shape to handle it.
That's interesting.
So I think that, I mean, I don't think that Salador was like, hey, there are spies listening right now, you shouldn't be talking about that, Queen's men are everywhere. I think that he felt pretty secure in saying, like, this is still something you can do, but maybe just think through it a little bit more.
So do you think it's not
good advice?
Or do you think it is supernatural then that Melisandre knew what his intentions were?
I don't know. You never know with Melisandre. She's like, she could be more like Varys, whose methods of getting information just seem very supernatural because he has spies everywhere and so he just knows a lot of shit. She could be the same if we hadn't already seen the stuff crawling out of her mm-hmm. vagina. So
you can say hoo-ha.
I can say vagina because that's the body part that it is. So I think that it's totally up to the reader, and we never get, at least in this book, we're not going to get a Melisandre perspective chapter. So we don't really know for sure how full of shit she is. So we have to assume that she does have supernatural capability mm-hmm. because, like he says in this chapter, she does drink the poison that kills the Meister and it has zero effect on her. And it could be like a Princess Bride thing where she's been slowly inoculating herself to a wide variety of poison. Anything's possible.
So I can clearly not choose glass in front of me.
Exactly. So she could have all kinds of backdoor ways of making herself seem supernatural. But I mean, to what's the quote? To a less advanced culture, anything that's unexplainable as magic or whatever.
Like yeah.
Science is magic to anybody who can't explain science.
In our case, as the fantasy reader, we don't have all of the information on not just the education, but we just don't have the information on what exactly is going on. So we have that, and we have the mystery of having limited perspectives, you know? Mm-hmm. So it really made me curious as well. I thought that there was a practical explanation for it, that in his shouting, someone heard, or maybe even Salador. You know, with all of the things that he's talking about, he's getting instead of money. It all sounds pretty nice. I mean, that's if and when Stannis takes over, being head honcho of Blackwater Bay for King's Landing, for a guy like him, I'm assuming he can make his own hours, kind of, you know, sail over here for a while if he wants, leave someone else in charge. You know? Yeah, it sounds like a pretty good deal. So I think that he's comfortably aware of his situation for what it's worth, but also from what we know of the man, it makes us not think that he's really focused on stuff like that. And from the way he treats Davos, we also want to be on his side. So it's curious, but do you think, just directly to magic, oh, she knew that he was coming, you know, like how do you go right to that? Because for a while, Davos, they didn't even know who this guy was. He was just beating on the doors. Like, you don't think there would have been a little bit more preparation, or I don't know. It's just, it's mysterious. It is a story.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think, though, the specificity of the weapon, you know, if she was just aware, or in this case, the guards were aware that there was something that Davos was carrying on him that was meant to do harm to her. Mm-hmm. That would have been more of a vision. The fact that it is that they actually mention the word Dirk leads you to believe that somebody passed along that information. And if they did, they had to do it very quickly, because think about it. Davos, he's not feeling well, and it takes him a little while to get up to the gates of Dragonstone.
You know, a couple
but
times.
How quickly can that information really travel? So that the timing would lead you to believe that maybe it is more of a vision on the part of Melisandre. It's hard to say. And mm-hmm. and Kate brought up the great point that we're not able to get inside the head of Melisandre at this point, so we don't know what her true intentions are. We don't know what her full capabilities are. We don't really know much about her and where she comes from and what her motives are.
If she saw Davos, let's just say that she did, in the fire, and this is the way her premonition was brought to her, and in the telephone game of guys running up and down the staircases in Dragonstone, like, oh no, we were given an order. Mm-hmm. Would Dirk have been passed along accurately, or was it just a happy coincidence?
Maybe we learn in a later chapter exactly how this all
Yeah, you know, you keep saying
it's
like,
possible. There are more chapters in the book.
God, I'd hate to get inside Melisandre's head finally and find out that she's just a big old fraud. Like, I want there to be some huge magical power behind her. I mean, even this other thing that Salador says, I'm going to quote here, there are shafts, they say, he's talking about Dragonmont, and secret stairs down into the mountain's heart, into hot places where only she may walk unburned. It is enough and more to give old man such terrors that sometimes he can scarcely find the strength to eat. So she can walk on like hot coals from inside a volcano and not get burned. Who do we know that can do that?
Targaryens?
Yeah. Like, Targaryens. What does this mean? What does this mean? Because she has this allegiance to this fire god, and they're at the seat of power, or what used to be for the Targaryens, and she can walk unburned in the fire. that's inside mm-hmm. this mountain. Like, mm-hmm. what is that? Where do you even begin? Like, if we're talking about old power coming from, you know, different gods, does that mean that the Lord of Light backs the Targaryens? Like, what does it mean is my question. Because we know that there are people in the world alive today who can do exactly that, almost by blood, because of their blood.
We really need to call George for this one.
Yeah.
Skip the last two books.
Just phone a friend.
Give us the answer.
I hope Melisandre is not magical. I will disagree with
really?
You, Eric, because I think that magic is such a fucking cop-out.
No! Oh my God, no!
Yeah, that's why I love this series, is because magic is on the fringe and it's encroaching on the actual story, but there's mm-hmm. so much that can be attributed to magic that you find out later is completely mundane. It's kind of, I don't know, it's the same kind of appeal as Batman. I'm going to compare Game of Thrones to Batman. Batman is amazing. Batman does some amazing things, and it could seem very supernatural if you don't understand it, but he's just full of gadgets and inventions and training. And yeah. so I think it's much cooler to believe that Melisandre just has a lot of knowledge of chemistry, of physics, and she has trained her body and her mind to do these incredible things. And she's like an evil, weird, fiery Batman.
Yeah.
And that's what I think.
What you just said reminds me of the episode that we saw where she's in the bathtub and
yes.
Selyse comes in and she starts talking to her about all these different potions that are and chemicals that are sitting, you know, kind of on the side. And she basically says that I can make things.
She's like, I can make a man see smoke where there's no fire. Yeah,
she's like, between these potions and my nice rack, they will never know what hit them. But then again, we're in a world here where there are dragons. Like, that's not a facade. That's not smoke and mirrors.
They're mechanical.
There are animatronic.
No, but let's remember where she comes from, right? She comes from the East. And there's definitely something that, with the exception, I would say, of what exists beyond the wall in Westeros, right?
Which better not be a hoax.
Right. In Essos, there's far more that we see and that we encounter that has sort of a magical element to it. And mm-hmm. it's growing in strength. And that when we read A Clash of Kings, it's been attributed to Dany and her rise and these dragons being born. The stronger they grow, the more power she acquires, the more magic that seems to exist in the world. And so I wonder if Melisandre draws upon that as well.
It's interesting. And going off of what Kate was saying, I think that we're facing a different kind of story where maybe in 60, 70, 80 years, if this world were real, they would look back at this time, like the time of Troubles, when the War of Five Kings, when all of this was happening, and they would see these legendary people that were either heroes or anti-heroes, or that were either fighting for good or fighting for bad or whatever, like however it ended up, however the victor eventually tells the history, they would be able to look back at it and say, this is what happened, because we get to see it. We're reminded of the history so much while we're reading it. That's part of the lore. Like, we're learning, I mean, we're in Dragonstone and we know so much about Dragonstone from its history and its past, right? Mm-hmm. As the magic creeps into the story, we're essentially experiencing what will one day be a legend and the things that it takes for that legend to come to pass for people like Arya and for people like Sansa and for people like Baelish and for people like Rob and for people like Tyrion to do what their path is and however George has sort of meticulously arranged this story and the role of magic being such a just a almost like a tease, just like a dangerous drug almost, that even a little bit of it, even a little bit of this mystery and a little bit of this unexplained power, if you can call it that, coming back into the world, it just changes the entire ecosystem so harshly. And we're not even 5%, I think, into what it could really be. Mm-hmm. And for this woman to singularly be able to represent so much of that mystery on her own and knowing where she comes from, it just makes me think, well, maybe she is getting more power or something, because she did. I mean, at the end of the day, there was a shadow demon that came out of her vagina.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I can say it too.
That's not something happened. I guess I'm afraid of that word. No, I, well, she, look, I like to believe that this world is a world where these raw forces are active in the life of everyday man. And even if Melisandre doesn't have it, even if a majority of what she does is smoke and mirrors or sleight of hand, I like to believe that there is this power that gets called on, that can be called on, that is actually affecting these people's lives, such as the Shadow Baby, such as the resurrection of Beric Dondarrion and any number of other, you know, things. When shit gets real, those moments, including what we've seen in the TV show Up North, like,
yeah,
I cannot believe that all of that is fake. And so I love kind of playing the game of, well, how magical is this? You know, in pretty much every aspect of anybody who claims to do magic.
Very interesting. Very interesting.
We met a young boy in this chapter, or Davos met a young boy in this chapter.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he did. A very important young boy.
King's blood.
Some would argue a Gendry substitute.
I know. Is he important if they replace him with Gendry on the show?
No one can replace Gendry.
No one.
In the show, Gendry was used as a substitute for Edric because Gendry is also a bastard of Robert's, and it wouldn't have made sense to cast Edric and to bring him into the fold when you already had somebody like Gendry.
And they would have had to cast Sir Courtney Penrose, too. I mean, come on. You get the set.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Of course. The whole set. I think it also allowed for potential character interaction that maybe could be important later on in the series. You know, Melisandre and Arya. That obviously doesn't happen because she never goes after Gendry. But interesting that they felt important to include that in the show, and of course the interaction that happened between the two of them. So I think he just stood as being a stand-in and showed that there is some level of importance in this idea of sacrificing the blood of the king.
What I think is interesting also, though, is that Edric Storm tells Sir Davos that his father visited once a year, and this is something that I really don't think Robert did with all of his children, with all of his bastard kids.
The impression that I've gotten is that Edric Storm is a Baratheon guy. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I also don't think Robert knew of all the bastards. That I mean, he knew, but like, I don't think he knew where all of them are.
It's hard to remember.
Yeah.
Are you making the case that he would visit more if he knew they existed?
Yeah, maybe.
He's dead, also not real.
Yeah, I guess.
Let's quit the show.
That really trivializes any point I would bring up.
I like him. He's straight up. Edric Storm doesn't worry about anybody's feelings. He's like, I'm 7. I'm going to ask you some questions about yourself.
He's got manners. He says,
then again, he's totally blunt. He says, you shouldn't get in my way when I'm running. That's like the first.
Yeah, that's the way he introduces himself. But he also just straight up calls out Stannis. He's like, did my uncle cut off your fingers? And then Davos was like, kind of, yeah. And he shows him, and he's like, he shouldn't have done that. Like, he's the king, man. Maybe watch it when you're calling Stannis' decisions into question. Davos is defending him.
Right.
But this kid clearly realizes, like, I'm Robert's son, so I'm probably more entitled to the throne than Stannis. Stannis. Man. I keep calling him Stannis. I think I don't know. There's some weirdness there, and Edric definitely gives the impression of being less a ward and more of a hostage to me. Huh. Like he's being protected by Stannis because he proves that the Lannisters aren't the actual ones in line for the throne, but that does not necessarily mean that Stannis is super interested in sitting Edric on the throne.
Right.
I think this Warhammer that Edric has was given has really gotten to his head.
The little one. Little baby.
What's Thor's hammer? Mjolnir? Mjolnir? Yeah. I imagine it's just like that. I imagine he just has a little one.
I think it's interesting that I think Gendry didn't have any real contact with Robert after he was born, but Edric apparently had a very fruitful relationship with Robert.
And Gendry lived a lot closer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gendry lived in town.
It almost feels like we get to be with Robert for a moment, getting to hear someone speak fondly of him. He goes, my father would not have chopped off your fingers. Yeah. And it's just like, you know what? Robert wouldn't have. He would have.
That's true.
I don't know what it would have done. He would have licked his fingers. I didn't know him that well either.
Licked the onion right off him.
Yes. That's what he would have done.
He would have. And then he would have downed a mug of ale. He would have toasted Davos. Not the same way Melisandre would have toasted Davos.
Oh, slam.
I just love the fact, like, Edric Storm is the product of Robert Baratheon getting drunk during Stannis' and Selyse's wedding, which you know was just a fucking awesome time. There was just, it was a
rollicking good time, real
was
party.
Was it or was it boring? And I mean,
I think we're being heavily sarcastic here.
How? I mean, we know they could afford it, but do you think they even had an open bar?
No. I feel like anywhere Robert goes, there's an open bar.
Robert would have found a bar.
Yeah.
Robert would bring the bar to the party.
There was more party going on in that room with Robert.
Because he looked past the very prominent ears of a Florent, which were surely shared by his mother. The Florents are known for one physical trait that was passed on to Edric. But all the rest are Baratheon, so I think that's pretty cool.
Well, bless Robert for having a heart. You know, bless him for that. Taking a little bit of sympathy bless on a poor
Florentine girl.
Florent. Florentine girl. Jesus.
So poor Davos is going to go to the dungeons.
Now, Axel Florent is the Hand of the King, right? The current Hand of the King.
Right.
And how unique is it, or how important it is, that the Hand of the King came and saw Davos?
Well, it sounds, it sounds like he was sent there to,
like, directly from
find
the higher-ups.
Yeah.
I mean, this is not, it's the middle of the night, right? Or it's, I believe
it's
random.
Yeah, and there's like
random
27 people in the castle, so they probably are just like, you're not busy right now. Can you go arrest this guy, please?
Yeah.
It's like, I'm the Hand of the King. Well, yeah, but everybody else is busy.
Yeah.
It's kind of a ghost town.
I feel like it would have been more disrespectful if he would have just sent a guard that didn't even know his name, if Stannis would have done that. So I'm curious, this kind of goes back to what we were saying earlier. How did the information get to them? Because I feel like if Melisandre just turned to him and was like, Hand of the King, there's a guy coming here to kill me.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, like, it's weird. It's strange.
Like with a dirk.
How, yeah, I'm interested on how it exchanged hands and how Axel Florent ended up being the one to pound downstairs and be like, good to see you, let's go.
It gives him kind of a supernatural, like, wisp of something super, like, you feel like maybe he also, like, because he's in the know. Clearly, like, the only three people, or the only two people that are supposed to know what Davos is up to is Davos and Salador San. So the fact that not only, I mean, Melisandre presumably knows, but that Axel knows, it's very unfortunate. And, you know, he doesn't get as close to her as he does in the show. Which is something that I wanted to bring up. The adaptation of Davos' attempted assassination of Melisandre works a little bit differently. And I kind of even like how I feel like it was improved in the show, but just because he gets so much closer.
It's two different ways for Davos to rejoin his king. We've got this one where he isn't even given an audience, and we've got another where he kind of acted a fool. He should have held his emotions together a little bit stronger, especially after what he had just been through. Than how he did on the television show, which, I mean, may do nothing but go to say that George knows Sir Davos much better than anyone else does, and he wrote Davos like what he would have done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I feel like George's Sir Davos would have went in there and just killed her without saying much. he seems that pissed off. I mean, read this chapter, people.
Yeah.
He is not calm at all.
Nope. And he he shouldn't be getting himself so worked up because he's got this terrible cough. I mean, he's coughing blood, for crying out loud.
Yep. Well, I believe we can safely, strongly, kindly assume that we're all ready to share our owns today.
I already gave my own earlier. I got it done like halfway through this episode, but I'm going to do it again because it deserves it. My own goes to Salador San for knowing when to roll out some snacks for a homie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to also share that own with Kate. For bringing out the white cheddars and the olives that he had just finished counting for, like, his job. Like, we're shipping this many. Just grab a bowl of those. It'll be fine, because that's what everyone else does. And there's a little bit of reality in that.
Mm-hmm.
So to Salador as well, for everything that she said, plus the olives and the cheese.
Micah?
Because it sounded so good.
My own goes to Salador San for his good humor about a certain man from Pentos. Who hasn't been mentioned in quite some time.
Illyrio's big butt.
He says, Illyrio Mopatis, a whale with whiskers. I'm telling you truly. These chairs were built to his measure, though he is seldom bestirring himself from Pentos to sit in them. A fat man always sits comfortably, I am thinking, for he takes his pillow with him wherever he goes.
Yay!
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that.
What the hell, guys?
If only you could sleep on it.
I don't have much of a choice here. I have to make the own of this episode unanimous. I'm going with Salvador San as well.
Yes!
He is the best friend to Davos here, and he tries unsuccessfully, but he tries to talk him out of it. He says, "You can't even hold that dirk. What are you going to do with that? You're going to kill it? Really? You're going to, where do you, how far do you think you're going to get? P.S. There are spies everywhere." So bless him for trying to tell Davos down, to talk him down. But, and also trying to recruit him for just, to just go and smuggle and stuff again. Just be like, come with me, man. We'll chill. So I think he's just, he's all over the place, but I think he really does love this man. He loves Davos.
He could have easily said, just don't do that and come hang out on my ship. There are more olives and cheese where that came from. Instead, as a friend, he knew that the kind of man Davos is, he wants to be busy. He wants to be doing something. So he immediately, he comes in like with his collarbone sticking out. Like he's pretty much dying and he's hacking up oozy black liquid and the guy offers him a job with his own ship. He's like, we'll give you ship right now. That's how good of a friend Salvador San is. Mm-hmm. And I think we can all learn something from this guy.
Yeah,
all right?
Definitely.
Put your feet up. Just put them up.
Have some cheddar.
Hey, I think it's time for tweets.
Tweets.
Twones.
All right, Eric, tell us what old Twitter bot's saying.
Karen Smith says, my own for the Davos chapter goes to Patchface for foreshadowing the red wedding in his rhyme. So that's one more vote for the red wedding. Also,
what do you think, listeners?
Hashtag on Karen Smith's tweet, chains for the bridegroom. Margot says, Davos chapter own goes to Salador. These, quote, these Pentashi would drink their own water if it were purple, eh? Hashtag pee wine. Hashtag ha ha ha. Hashtag own. Okay. James Burr says, my own goes to Salvador San for his description of Illyrio and pointing out that a fat man always sits comfortably. Yep, yep. Susan Stacy says, Storm of Swords chapter 10, Davos 2. This chapter has multiple owns for me, starting with Patchface owns foreshadowing, with Salvador San owning Illyrio while Melisandre owns Davos and Stannis' court as well.
It's decisive.
Pluissa added, Edric Storm owns, I wish at age 10 I had learned these words to live by. Quote, you shouldn't get in my way when I'm running. That would be fun.
Just common sense.
We've been getting a lot of really nice tweets lately, and I know that that is just kind of a really vague thing to say, but we've been having a good time. Everything's been going swell. The summer's over. And a lot of you guys are revisiting old episodes, and I recommend you to check out our at replies. Because there's a few things from there that were actually pretty hilarious. And yes, Mike, it did scare me. Thank you, everyone, for talking to us on Twitter. We're very grateful
especially
that you are all alive.
Yeah, shout out to Rusty Shackelford, who said that we are working on my little girl's Arya costume. And his little girl is adorable. And she's even got a little needle with her. So standing by a nice tree. So I don't know. I'd say that that girl is a Maisie Williams stand-in in the making.
Yeah.
Cute.
And if you turn your listening eyes to our Facebook page, you will see that I posted a photograph of Nedward Stark holding a pumpkin spice latte. So,
I did see that.
Autumn is coming.
Right? It's on its way and it's here and it feels great outside. So if you're listening to us indoors, once this is over, please walk outside and enjoy the weather.
Have a nice pumpkin latte. So one other way that you can get in touch with the show is by leaving a review on iTunes. We do have a few examples here to read from. The first one from Royal Dragoness. Sounds like a poor name. And they say, this show is outstanding. I've been catching up on the episodes from the beginning, and from someone who read the books years ago, I can assure you that they're next to no spoilers. It's good to know. Except for that whole episode we did. That was
a spoiler episode.
We said we would talk about that one.
The hosts know their stuff. They play off each other wonderfully and bring light to new and old ideas. With all of this, though, the best part is still the humor. Whether it is their daily life, the owns in each episode, running jokes, or threats, I find myself laughing aloud. And yes, I did say threats. They managed to make me want to be threatened.
Ooh.
Oh, man. I want to listen to this show.
That sounds like a great podcast.
Yeah, that sounds wonderful.
Thank you, Royal Dragoness.
Thank you, Royal Dragoness.
Yes, another one from Podcast Addictee.
Ooh. Oh,
good.
Who says, best GOT podcast available. This is a great great Game of Thrones podcast. With a combination of book readers and Unsullied, it's perfect for the show watching only crowd. They also do fantastic book review shows and are very good about not spoiling the story for those of us who are Unsullied. Maybe a little too much laughing, Kate.
Mm.
He didn't say Kate. I know. But at least
I know who he's talking to.
Guys, we're gonna need to get sad before we record, yeah. Okay?
But at least the podcasters enjoy each other's company and love producing the podcast. Well done. Luke Larson says few podcasts manage to nail the mix of intense, serious analysis with silly humor and wit. No other Game of Thrones podcast dives into the nitty gritty of character motivations, plot arcs, and threaded themes the way these guys do. But the best part is that not only do you get the idea that this group of people have a passion for the series, but are actually friends, too.
Hey, it does help. Reggie? It helps sometimes.
Are we friends then?
No forced conversations or awkward interactions. Zach just edits all that out.
Yeah.
I was going to say, Zach, that's just all
just in the... It's a very, very good editing.
You made it sound like you weren't reading from a script there, Micah.
Just the very best is how Luke concludes.
Thank you, Luke Larson.
I yell at them between every take. We just... It's pretty brutal.
Another one here from Bare Bones says, what a treat. On my long drives to and from work every day, I get to listen to a wonderful group of people read, watch, and analyze a story that I love so very much. It's also nice to hear Eric and Micah's voices from my MuggleCast listening days.
Mm.
Thanks for laying down the gauntlet for what a real podcast should be. And Kate, please, please never stop laughing.
Okay.
Damn.
We got some polarizing views.
They gave you a double-chinned smiley emoji.
As polarizing as ice and fire. Ooh.
Ooh. Whoa. Can I just say... I've had a fantastic weekend, and this is a really great way to cap it off. I've had such a good time recording with you guys today.
Agreed.
Thank you guys for the reviews. That's just way to
these
just,
are amazing,
you know,
reviews. Thanks so much.
We get the end of the episode, and we read these out loud, and then you make us all happy, and thank you.
Blows our mind.
I will not laugh, and then I will also laugh forever.
Yeah, it's true. I echo what Zach said. It's great to read these reviews, and, you know, having... You know, this kind of feedback from the people who listen to the show is great for us, but it's also great for people who may be looking to find a Game of Thrones podcast and happen across your very insightful reviews.
You know, speaking of that, if you'd like to get in contact with us, or once you start listening and decide to participate in the owning game by sending us your owns, you can do so as often as we podcast. In various ways, including Twitter. We are at Game of Owns, twitter.com/Game of Owns. Mm-hmm. On Facebook, we are facebook.com/Game of Owns. And of course, there's the email address that we have, which is contact@gameofowns.com. You can send us all your longer format questions, concerns, owns. And of course, iTunes, as Micah mentioned, is a cool place where you can share the love.
If you're wondering how to join the fight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Freedom.
If you'd like to be free and pay for it. No, I don't know what to say. I have no idea what to say. Let me
You're doing great so far.
Really? Okay, good. I'm just going to keep this then. We have our Patreon page, patreon.com/goo. Mm-hmm. It is still in our minds in the early stages because we understand that, you know, the show's been going on for a while and we're certainly in this for the long haul, but, and what time that we've been able to make for us, for each other and for the show throughout everything else happening. We've thought lots about this and we are really excited that, it's happening and that so many people, like Kate said, almost 100 of you have taken up banners and are helping, toss into the pile of what could be really fun opportunities for our show, which could breed really fun opportunities, to interact with you guys. So if you would like, there are lots more bits of information on the URL that I mentioned previously.
Go check it out.
That's good, right?
Mm-hmm.
And thank you to everybody who has joined our Bannermen so far.
Thank you to our Bannermen and our little birds. We like you.
We do.
Unless you just betrayed Davos to Melisandre. Unless you're her little bird as well.
If it was one of you guys, I swear to God.
Yeah. But if you were at the $10 level, it's okay.
That's a threat.
There is no $10 level.
Some people do it anyway.
Yeah, they do.
Someone's paying 20. Someone's doing it.
Bless their heart.
I know.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah. Mom. I wish it was my mom. She doesn't know what I do.
Oh.
She doesn't want to know.
No, she doesn't. How do we close this episode?
Next week we're doing Jamie.
Are we?
Speak for yourself.
That man knows how to use his hands.
So, if you're interested in being a part of that, tune in next week.
We'll see you soon.
He's on a boat.
See, now one of us would have to attempt to spell the word.
O-L-F-A-C-T-O-R-Y.
Yes.
It's like, it's like the old factory. Oh.
You've never seen the National Spelling Bee, Eric?
You know, Kate had the best sentence, I think, using olfactory.
That would be a no.
I would hate for that to be overlooked.
Jesus, it's on ESPN these days.
Down by the old factory where we used to run in the rubble and the dirt.
I'm in the old factory right now, guys.
Oh, well. God.
God, I miss the factory.
God, I miss the screaming. I'm sorry.
While Dragonstone rose from the Sea of Head. Whoops.
The Sea of Head? I don't quite think so.
Oh, man. I'm bad. All right. When he came up on...